So last weekend, I think that's right, isn't it? You were in Knoxville.
I was. I had to tell you. So I was trying to tell a story, and everybody kept saying, "Well, do the one from what was the one with Mark Wahlberg?"
Oh yeah, Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights. So this everybody gets to say, "Hey, tell the story of Boogie Nights." And so I start into the story of being in the, you know, in the washroom and with the guy screwing and all the rest of this, and all of a sudden in the middle of it, just as I'm about to describe his you know what, a friend of mine who owns Scarefest of all things walked in with her kids. And I said, I'm sitting here, and this guy is swinging a building, and he's what, just whamming this building in and out of this other building, and
oh wow!
I'm telling you, the funny thing is that everybody in the audience, and I mean, there were like about 60, 70 people there, and they were all. They all twigged it completely to what was going on, and they were rolling, absolutely rolling. So, anyway, but building substitutions for it's a thing, and it works.
Well, I think Mark Wahlberg was embarrassed about that building.
No, I'm just saying, you know, and I had to say that in the build in the beginning. I said, you know, and then they took out that, then the prop master took out this paper bag and pulled the paper bag off to reveal this multi-story building.
It's like an architecture story.
It was.
Oh boy.
Yes. You know, yeah. Questionable as to whether that that top deck thing was going to work, but you know.
So you—that's how you do your things. Now you take requests, like which story do you want? You put it on the board.
You know, the weird thing about it is these people are getting to know me so well that they tell me what story they want to hear next. And a lot of them actually listen to the podcast too. In fact, I have been told that this is the perfect go to the store podcast.
Okay, that makes sense. It's about 20 minutes usually.
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes. It's about the time that it takes you to get to the store, and I've been told that's a good thing.
Is that 20 minutes no matter where you live?
Well, it's. That's only in the United States.
Okay.
That's only domestic, right?
Because some people in those islands in the Bahamas probably have to go to Miami to shop. So.
Well, I'm just but you know, at the same time, it takes a lot longer to download the show. So
it does.
There you go.
Well, that's why you just go to YouTube.
Exactly.
Well, nobody
wants
to see the faces.
Everybody does, don't they?
But people don't want to see our faces, really.
Yeah. Who would want to see that? Look at this mug. So anyway, yeah, no, there are a lot of people there. I had a great time. I got to have a lot of people laughing. I did say, you know, I've got to work more towards the west and south and north because going east around here. I've sold out too many of my books. People keep going, yeah, I already got your book. So why do that?
Well, you know.
Sit there and wave my building around?
You need to start putting it in different languages and sell it to some of the countries.
Well, you know, I should actually sit down next year for another book. But everybody wants me to write one about Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and I don't want to.
I want you to.
But I have other books. I have other books in my, that I can.
I want to do your audiobook for free.
For three.
No, it'll include your interviews. It'll be you reading the book in a dramatic way. Just a few key episodes.
Except for, you see, or the chapters. Thing that you're skipping is my writing of the book.
Oh,
which, you know, I'm not sure that that's going to happen.
Well, you just interview everybody.
You were busy all weekend. You couldn't come by and see.
Well, I was like, oh, maybe I can get there Saturday. And then it turned into, oh, maybe I'll try to get there Sunday. And then I was like, well, that probably won't work. So by the time I realized that, you were already in Nashville.
Yeah.
No, I it wasn't even on my radar. I probably would have planned for that weekend if I had it on my list or whatever. But now that the kids are out of school, we're busier, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I know. I got you.
They're doing summer camps and swimming lessons, and it's crazy.
I actually am going to be coming out sometime to do a Central Cinema film.
Well, I want to do that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are a lot of fun. Those really are.
Yeah, it's weird because isn't there something coming up in October?
I think something
in Knoxville. I can't remember what it was, but. But definitely, I'll try to put that on my calendar. That way, I remember it.
You are leaving.
See, I don't have these film festivals all over my calendar like you do.
Well, they contact me. What films are we looking at today?
I had something to bring up. I'm annoyed with these podcast losers because I was thinking about this.
Which ones?
Well, first there's like what's his name, Fat Larry. No, Chunky Larry.
Chunky Larry,
and he was with the Geek Squad or something.
Right.
Well, that didn't go very well.
No,
and then
it
was looking at Project Louder, and I'm like, how did that go? That kind of sucks.
Well, he went and got an actual job.
Well, that's probably what happened there.
Yeah.
And then there was that guy in Nashville that said, hey, I want to put you on the radio. I never heard from him again. And then, Indie Brigade. This is the most annoying one because I was uploading things every week like a little soldier doing what I was supposed to do. And I was never told that they stopped taking them. So, it was like months I was uploading stuff. And Joe never told me, hey, we're not doing that anymore. So,
well, there you go.
I'm just saying I feel a little like used. I'm like a piece of meat or something.
You feel like a tissue with something.
Yes,
on
just wadded up and tossed down the garbage. But anyway, so I would never do that to the other podcast if I was big enough to like have my own little channel with 800 people on it. Anyway,
there
so I'm mad because nobody told me that they suck, and they're not good at communicating.
Well. Communication doesn't seem to be a big thing these days.
No, but I'm calling out people, not by name.
One by one, right?
Not by name, Joe. So anyway. He just never bothered to say, "Hey, stop uploading those. You're wasting your time." And same with the Nashville guy. Okay, anyway, moving on. A quiet drifter is tricked into a janitorial job at the now condemned Willy's Wonderland. The mundane task suddenly becomes an all-out fight for survival against wave after wave of demonic animatronics. Fist fly, kicks land, titans clash, and the only one side will make it out alive. Oh, God. So, Nick Cage. You said, let's do a Nick Cage movie. And I noticed it was a recent movie, and I'm like, his recent movies have sucked. So I didn't really want to do it. And then I said, okay, I'll give it a chance. I got to the open credits, the song It's Your Birthday, blah, 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 about a minute 20 in or so. And I'm like, it's a bad movie, but maybe I'll still give it a chance. And then something happens.
Right?
It's not even good. So it's. I was thinking, okay, this isn't even as good as Blumhouse. This is not as good as your worst Troma movie. And then I said, okay, something happens. And I was like, this is actually pretty good.
And all of a sudden, you're really into it, right?
It was the ostrich fight, I think. Oh, no, it was before that.
The thing is I saw this and I didn't have any warning. I didn't have any clue as to what it was about, right? And the thing is I think I spent the first 15 minutes expecting Nick Cage to say something, right? And yeah. Then all of a sudden I got, oh, I don't think he's going to say anything.
Well, he reminded me, see, this is actually Nick Cage. They did the right thing. So the director said, okay, we're going to let Nick Cage be Nick Cage. And I think that's right. Why those movies absolutely. I've seen recently have sucked so bad, because he's not playing his normal thing. His quirky,
normal crazy ass thing. Right.
Like Raising Arizona, one of my favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Crazy. Leaving Las Vegas. But anyway, no, so the thing that's confusing about this movie is there's like two final girls, kind of, in a way. In a weird way.
Yeah, there is. And one of them just gets away, though.
Right. I just thought that was really... It's a really basic movie that is so predictable, but it was really entertaining to watch.
Right.
I liked watching them beat the shit out of things. And that's what Nicky does best. That's right.
That's, you know what? That's it. And watching him clean.
Well, they put a pinball machine and they said, okay, just act crazy like you always do.
Right, right. And away he went, you know? And the thing is now, truth be told, is for some reason after I saw that movie, literally 2 weeks later, the director called me up.
Oh, really? Cool.
To come work with him. And he directed Pig Hill, the film I was on for 2.5 years.
Ah, yes. Okay. Cool.
And we had a great time, and he's a really, really good director. And the thing is just today I had to ask him a question that was burning in my head. I don't know why I didn't ask it when I was up on Pig Hill, but I finally got to ask. I said, okay, so did you guys just start with a completely clean bunch of sets, and then Nick Cage comes in and you trash it, right? As he, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did.
That would make sense.
Right. So all those great, what do you call them? Those great series of shots of him cleaning. Cleaning are just basically him. They just come in, they would mess up a segment, and then he would work on it, and then they'd mess up another segment, keep on going, and then just play it for us in reverse. So, see
yeah,
what they did there?
Uh-huh. That's good thinking,
yeah, brains and everything, yeah.
Well, see, I don't know, I like how he's very stoic. He's probably easy to work with, I bet Nick Cage is. And I bet you the director sounds like he's easy to work with.
Yeah, no, he was really cool. And the director ended up really liking Nick Cage.
Cool.
Saying, yeah, Nick Cage, he called Nick Cage the kind of wind him up and let him go star.
Well, what's weird about Nick Cage is he's very, like, straight-faced. And that's one thing I like about him. He's kind of like a Buster Keaton almost, like, where he's doing all this crazy but he has his straight face.
Right, he never breaks.
I mean, he does that kind of sometimes, but
he never even looks angry. He never he comes in. You know what? Here's what he did. He came in. He made an agreement. He followed that agreement. Then he gets in the car and he leaves.
So that shot of him leaving, was that just him leaving the set? He's like, I got paid. I'm out of here.
I got paid. I'm out.
Because I know he had some issues in the past with real estate and stuff, but we're not talking about that. But anyway.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I love Nick Cage in this. I gotta tell you, I love Nick Cage. I also love Nick Cage in the one where he plays Nick Cage. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
The insufferable light of being Nick Cage. And it's really funny.
I kind of got turned off in Nick Cage because I was watching some of those action movies he was doing that were just kind of second rate for a while. I can't do it right now.
You should see that one. He plays opposite the guy who does The Mandalorian.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like that actor. He's a cool actor. He's doing like, isn't he the host of that show now? Actors, something, something.
Oh, is he doing the? Has he replaced what's his face?
Yeah.
I love the fact that we haven't actually used the name yet at all.
What is his name? Pascal something, isn't it?
Yeah, Pascal. Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal. Yeah, he's awesome.
Right. Pedro Pascal and Nick Cage starred in a movie that's the title is something like The Insufferable Perfection of Being Nick Cage, right?
Well, and
is hilarious.
Sign me up. I'm ready to watch that one.
There you go.
What did you think of the effects and everything? I thought they were really well done, very simple, well, yeah, for the most part.
You know what was great is I liked that the director kept doing these push-ins on the creatures and nothing would happen. And he would do these really long push-ins, and he said, yeah, you know, we were trying to do one red herring after the other. And go, oh, it really worked.
And some of the characters...
A long pushing and nothing.
I did notice that it was kind of like watching Chucky, but for a little too long.
Yeah.
Waiting
for him
to blink or something.
You know, those characters reminded me of that picture of Chucky, of Chuck E. Cheese out in the middle of the, out in the middle of the junkyard.
Well, you know, when I was a child, it was showbiz.
When you was a child,
showbiz pizza. Chucky was just a second rate character. I don't know what happened to showbiz. The bear? Just saying. He was cool.
Bears ate him, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I think showbiz might have had some problem with maybe some heroin or something. I don't know. Allegedly. Sorry. Gotta say that.
Yeah. Hey, you don't want to go there. You know, that's an accusation.
Well, I said allegedly.
Oh.
So I'm just saying I might have heard
something.
Well,
that's allegedly an accusation.
It's hearsay.
Heresy? Yes, heresy.
So I think overall this was good. The acting was pretty good, too. I mean, I got to say, the lighting, everything was good. The sets were nice. Everything was pretty.
Yeah.
The blood was great.
Now, here's the thing, though. I just wound up working with that same crew that decided to walk off, that decided to strike halfway through our film. And they were real scumbags. And the thing is they left. They left their friends, Kevin, all the production people that they knew and everything. This guy David, that was the first DP, he was such a scumbag. And we're standing in the middle of this field halfway through. And this is what the IOTC does. IOTC likes to if they want to turn a show, they'll know from the beginning before it starts. And so they got the gaffer who was a scumbag. His name was Jeff. And by the way, I'm not going to name names or anything, but his name was Jeff, and he was a scumbag. And Jeff was a scumbag, and he wanted to turn the show. So Jeff goes and decides so what they do is what IOTC will have you do is a show is, if it's called a 2-and-2, that means it's two grips and two electricians, right? But what they do is they get you to load the show as much as possible. So as a gaffer, you could say, hey, the next day I need to go 3-and-3. And then, so what they'll do is they always try and get up to being 5-and-5. And then on the day that they're 5-and-5 and you're too far into the show to actually stop filming because of a strikeage, right? Then they go on strike, right? Now, I had seen this happen. Yeah, I just can't even tell you how many times, right? And every day I kept showing up on set, and there'd be more equipment. Going, dude, guys, you got to look around. I kept going to the PM. I kept going, look, these guys are going to strike on you. You got to know that they're all scumbags. And she would say things like, no, these are all friends of mine. And the director would say,
who's that, the producer?
Yeah, the producer was like, no, no, these guys are friends of mine. I'm like, well, yeah, you should probably get better friends. And then the director goes, no, but the DP's my buddy. He did Willy's Wonderworld. And I go, well, yeah, but he's kind of turning out to be a dick. And so this keeps on going. And finally, 2 weeks in, they decide that they're going to strike. And of course, it was all pre-planned, right? and we're standing out in the middle of a cornfield. And in the middle of the cornfield, the gaffer went, I'm like trying to eat breakfast up in the breakfast tent, right? Now, and this is in the, this is actually breakfast at the end of the day, because then you're going to shoot all night, right? And so I'm trying to eat breakfast because I always spend, you know, my first 2 or 3 hours with them, and then I go back to like working on the future sets, right? But I'm getting my breakfast, and just as I went and sat down, all of a sudden they go, "There's a big meeting in the field out there." And I go, "Okay, well, let me finish my breakfast." And they, "No, they want to make sure you're out there." So they go out, and I figure, well, it's another safety meeting. But when I get there, Jeff, the gaffer, is holding court how unfair everything has been, right? And I go, and first of all, usually the union is only going to strike you if you're like, if you have like a lot of money behind you. And this was not that big of a progression. I think it was like 750,000 or something like that. And also, you know, maybe there's a distribution company behind it, which there is not, you know. So the obviously IOTC got their information wrong, which is what IOTC always does. And by the way, I've always thought that IOTC was essentially a criminal enterprise. And hey, it was started by criminals, and it has been run by criminals ever since. So they're standing out in the middle of the field, and this gaffer is pontificating upon, you know, what a mess everything is, and the looks on the faces of all the producers, I mean, it's just like they're just shocked. And so in the middle of the field, I turned around and I just said, "Okay, all you people are just being too fucking polite about this, okay?" No, I did. I said,
"No,
you're
they
all
are
being
probably
too polite." I said, I turned to the DP and I said, "You sniveling, you could bleep that out as it." As you have to.
I kind of like it.
And I just started to go. I just started to literally eat his face out there. And then Jeff starts talking, and I go, "I wasn't talking to you, dickhead. You're not the boss, and you're certainly not the boss of me." And I just went after him. Then I literally had to leave the set because I had already started to automatically look for baseball bats. But on the way out, the DP, you know, goes, "Mick, you know, here's the thing. What you don't understand is this isn't 1989 anymore." And I go, and here's the funny thing about it. This is like, I gotta say, here's the thing. The first time that I was working with R.A. Mihailov on this, right? And the first time that I ever had a union try and strike on a show was in the middle of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, which he was working on. So I thought, well, you know, maybe, but it kind of feels the same. And then I told him, "You know what's going to happen in the end? There isn't like a half a million behind this, you dumb shit. This is, you're just going to get all your people fired. You know what happened in the end? Just all of his people got fired." So, and he got fired. And literally, I think there was only like 5 or 6 people that were left on the film once everybody that got fired got fired.
Wow.
And then we started up 5 days. We started up again 5 days later.
Well, let me say.
So as far as Jeff and Jeff, as far as Jeff and David go, well, they can go suck a building.
Yeah, you know,
that was called a callback.
I like that.
It's a callback, yeah.
I was gonna say, like, when I was watching Willy's Wonderland, I didn't notice the photography was a little sloppy.
It was a little sloppy. That's kind of what I thought about it. You know,
you can tell there were some issues with the lighting and the.
We had a new guy named Tyler come in, and Tyler was amazing, and he.
Good job, Tyler.
He picked right up where where David peed his pants, and we went from there.
He peed his pants?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he's a little tiny guy, and I think that I scared the living shit out of him early, though. Because I looked like I was going to come after him with a baseball bat, which, actually, if I'd been there another 5 minutes, chances are I would have come after him with a baseball bat.
I would have picked a rubber arm. Because that makes you look more crazy.
Hey, and there were a couple of those laying around, too.
Why did I miss this? See, I would have enjoyed this. I would have just sat there with my popcorn.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to say, I enjoyed it immensely. I really did, you know.
Well, if you need a strike breaker, give me a call.
Okay,
I'm your guy. I'll piss everybody off.
No. There you go. Hey, listen. I'm
good at pulling cable.
I've never needed backup on pissing people off.
So what do we rate this?
Oh, rating this. You know what? I like this a lot. I think I'm going to go for a 4 out of 10.
What about if we did 5?
Yeah, wait, 4, yeah, 4 point, yeah. How about 4.5 out of 10? I go 4.5. I liked it a lot.
I thought we had a 5-point scale. I'm so confused.
We do have a 5-point scale.
Because I was going to say I'd give it like a, well, I was going to give it like a 3.5 out of 5, but the DP kind of f***ed all the shots up, so I might have to give that a 2.3 or something.
It might go down from that. I mean, you know, honestly, I would say the one thing I didn't like is I really didn't like the lighting at the end where we were outside and the cars were there and stuff, because that kind of looked Mickey Mouse, kind of looked like a Dragnet lighting.
It was Dragnet lighting.
Yeah, Dragnet lighting.
I wouldn't have made that connection.
I had some beefs. I had a couple of little beefs with the art department and stuff like that. I think they could have done a little bit better to make it look a little bit more like it was a amusement park, but you know.
Well, they're going for the Chuck E. Cheese look, but it did look like kind of like a bar.
yeah, it did.
A lot like a bar.
It did. It looked exactly like an abandoned market, which is probably exactly what it was.
But the way they set it up, it almost looked like they had a bar in there. Which is weird, because at the end they're talking, well, I'm ruining the story, but at the end they're talking about making it a bar.
Right. Anyway, I think enough of that.
Yeah. All I can say is that the director's smart, because Nick Cage has been sucking wind with his movie choices, so you get him while he's down.
There you go.
Like, I have a list of actors. If I ever direct a movie, I am going to go for these actors because they're not working, and they're doing some really things.
Nick Cage has really had this kind of a career, right?
I think, no, I seriously think he had some issues back. I think I was reading somewhere about years ago, but he was having issues with real estate when the bubble popped back in 2008 or something.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
And so he's just kind of decided to take everything that was thrown his way to pay bills, I think.
How hard can it be to be Nick Cage, right?
What's wrong with taking everything that's thrown your way? You probably learned something doing that, right?
I did that for a long time.
I mean, if I was a famous actor, I'd probably just take the scripts and just throw them up. And whatever lands upright, I'd take.
Whatever landed within the circle, right?
Right. Yes, within my star on the floor.
Yeah, that's right. Within your 5-pointed star.